Chapter 29. In front of the trench, the grass was flattened by the repeated counter-attacks that had swept across it, stained by the blood of those who had dragged themselves back from the Boer positions along the crest, and littered with the twisted corpses of those who had not. Every few seconds a shell exploded along the British line, so there was a continual moving forest of bursts, and the shrapnel hissed like the flails of threshing giants. John Aitchison forced himself to his feet and climbed onto the parapet and shouted, "Come on, lads! This time they'll not stop us!" In the trench below him, the dead and the wounded lay upon each other, two and three deep, all of them coated with a layer of red dust. The same red dust coated the faces that looked up at him as he shouted again, "Bugler, sound the charge! Come on, lads, forward! Take the bayonet to them!" The bugle started to sing, brassy and urgent. Aitchison hopped like a gaunt old stork from the parapet and flapped his sword. Behind him he heard laughter from a dozen throats. Not the laughter of ordinary men, but the chilling discord of insanity. "Follow me, the lanks! Follow me!" His voice rose to a shriek, and they scrambled from the trench behind him, dusty spectres with bloodshot eyes, smeared with dust and their own sweat. Their laughter and their curses blended with the babbling of the wounded, outstripped it, and climbed into a chorus of wild cheers. Without form, spreading like spilled oil, the charge flowed out towards the crest, 400 men staggering through the dust-storm of shell-fire and the tempest of the Mausers. Aitchison stumbled over a corpse and fell. His ankle twisted with a shock of pain that jolted his dulled senses. He recovered his sword, dragged himself up, and limped grimly on towards the rampart of boulders that marked the crest. But this time they did not reach it, to be thrown back as they had before. This time the charge withered before it had covered half the distance. In vain Aitchison waved them forward, yelling until his voice was a hoarse croak. They slowed and wavered. Then at last they broke and streamed back down the open, bullet-swept slope to the trench. Tears of frustrated anger streaking his dusty cheeks, Aitchison hobbled after them. He fell over the parapet and lay face down on the corpses that lined the trench. A hand shaking his shoulder roused him, and he sat up quickly and tried to control his breathing that shuddered up his throat. Dimly he recognized the man who crouched beside him. "What is it, Friedman?" he gasped. But the reply was drowned in the arrival of another shell and the delirious shrieks of a man wounded in the belly in the trench beside them. "Speak up, man!" "Heliograph message from Sir Charles Warren," shouted Saul. "You have been promoted general. You are in command of the peak." And then, with a dusty, sweat-streaked grin, he added, "Well done, sir." Aitchison stared at him aghast. "What about General Woodgate?" "He was shot through the head 2 hours ago." "I didn't know." Since morning, Aitchison had known nothing that was happening outside his own small section of the line. His whole existence had closed down to 100 yards of shrapnel and bullet-swept earth. Now he peered out at the holocaust around him and whispered, "In command? No one commands here. The devil is directing this battle." "Sir Charles is sending up 3 more battalions to reinforce us," Saul shouted into his ear. "We can well use them," Aitchison grunted. And then, "Friedman, I've sprained my ankle. I want you to lace up my boot as tight as you can. I'm going to need this foot again before the day is out." Saul knelt without argument and began working over his foot. One of the riflemen at the parapet beside him was thrown sideways. He fell across Aitchison's lap, and from the wound in his temple the contents of his skull splattered them both. With an exclamation of surprise and disgust, Saul pawed back and wiped his face. Then he reached forward to drag the body from Aitchison's legs. "Leave him," Aitchison prevented him sharply. "See to that boot." While Saul obeyed, Aitchison unwound the silk scarf from around his own neck and covered the mutilated head. It was a wound he had seen repeated 100 times that day, all of them shot through the right side of the head. "Allo Noel," he whispered fiercely. "If only we had taken Allo Noel." Then his tone dulled. "My poor lads." And gently he eased the shattered head from his lap.